Woody, there's a fellow that's still around Cincinnati that you happen to play in a game with. It's quite a famous game now that a lot of people talk about. You played in the great Joe Nuxall game. And I spoke to Joe during spring training last year about it and told him that I knew you, and he seemed to be well pleased. So tell me what you know about Joe Nuxall as a 15-year-old pitcher.
I was with Cincinnati. I was playing second base, and they brought Joe Nuxall in, and it was the hottest day you ever saw. I don't know how hot it was, but
it gets pretty hot in Cincinnati, doesn't it?
Yes, sir. His face was kind of red because he's been down and warmed up in the bullpen, and he come in and he couldn't get the ball over. Ball. And I finally went into the to the mound and stopped him, and I told him, I said, Joe, it's mighty hot there. I just come in here to rest you up a little bit, but I said, get the ball over the plate. You're gonna wear us out here. He said, I will. But he didn't. He didn't stay in much longer before McKechnie took him out.
Now, Woodrow, you live in this little town of Pamplin, Virginia, and you're probably, the only ex-major leaguer who lives here, but how about the surrounding area of Lynchburg and some of these other towns that have minor league ball clubs? Do you ever have any contact with some old ball players?
Well, we got Jim Bibby. Pitcher, he lives in Madison Heights. That's not too far from here. We got Ken Dixon. He lives in Amherst. That's not too awful far from where I live. With Baltimore. He's pitching pretty good this year. And let's see.
Catfish Hunter used to come around here, didn't he? To go hunting? I thought he came over around here. He didn't?
Clay.
Oh, Clay, okay.
You remember him?
I remember it. Clay was the Yankees.
With the Yankees.
A pitcher.
Yeah, I don't know where
Ken Clay.
Yeah, I don't know where he is now.
I think he's out of ball. I think so.
Yeah, he's out of ball. Well, the only one I see is once in a while is Enos Slaughter.
Do you see Enos once in a while?
Yeah, he stops by.
Well, I'll
he
be.
He lives at Roxburgh, North Carolina.
He sure does. And he runs a farm.
And that's not too far from here.
I talked to Enos not too long ago. He and Bob Feller were in Orlando, and I talked to both of them, and I tell you, they gave him the right name when they called him Country, because he's about as country as you're going to get. And I said to Enos, well, would it be any trouble getting in contact with you? Well, he said, I'm a farmer. He says, when I say I'm a farmer, I'm really a farmer. He says, if you call on the phone, chances are there won't be any answer, because he said, I'll be out on the tractor.
Yeah.
And that's where he is.
I got something to tell you about Enos.
Okay.
In Class D ball now, that was the first year.
Yeah.
He was playing right field for Martinsville. And I don't know why I talked with him like much. And I was talking with him one day, and I asked him, I said, Enos, how much are they paying you? And you know, that was a Cardinal outfit.
Yeah, they didn't pay much.
And I hate to tell you what he told me, but he certainly told me. He said, I'm getting $50 a month. He says, I was working on a cotton mill, and it was hot in there, and this guy asked me if I wanted to play baseball. And he said, yeah, I want to do anything to get out of this cotton mill. And that's what he told me he was getting, 50. And he said, how much are you getting? I said, I'm getting 125. Well, he said, great day, you got a big price, man. And I don't know whether he was telling me a story or not. But that's
I don't think Enos is that kind of a guy. I think Enos lays it right on the line. That's what I found out. I'm not a close friend of his, but I've talked to him, and he just doesn't pull any punches. And he didn't pull any punches when he told him that he thought he ought to be in the Hall of Fame. And then when he did get in the Hall of Fame, when he made his speech, he told him then, I think something to the effect that, well, it's about time, and why did you wait so long?
Well, you know how he hustled to the outfield and back.
He does in the old-timers game.
He's done the same thing in Class D ball.
Well,
making $50 a month.
I'll tell you now, when he plays in the old-timers game, he still hustles as fast. He doesn't hustle quite as fast, but he does the best he can. He just put on a few extra pounds.
Oh, I know, he's big.
And lost all his hair.
Yeah. Well, he was a good fella. He was always nice to me. I talked with him mainly every time we played with him. And we had a Dodger scout that come around pretty often down in that league. And I told him about him.
About Edith?
Yeah, I told him about him. I said, that man, he'll draw that right field in Ebbets Field. I said, because I've seen him. There's a big bank out there in right field.
I know, it sloped. Well, in Cincinnati, there was a slope, too.
Yeah, this bank is way up high.
Yeah.
And I saw him hit some on top of that thing. I don't know how far it was, but it was a long way. I don't know why they had such a bank there, you know, making the ballpark, I reckon. They had to round it out back there.
I have no idea. Well, there was a street back there, too.
Yeah.
Bedford Avenue.
Yeah, Bedford Avenue.
Woodrow, I just found out that there's a... You are familiar with a great name in Cincinnati baseball. You never played with him. But from what you've told me, I'm sure that the Cincinnati fans, and especially Bill Hugo, would like to hear what you got to say about this man. Who is he?
Ted Kaczewski. Bill McKechnie asked me, we had a day off. He asked me, could I come to the ballpark tomorrow morning? And I said, yeah. I said, what is it for? He said, we got a fellow wants to try. And I said, yeah, I'll be, what time do you want me to be there? He said, about 9:30. And I said, all right. So he had all the infielders come out, all but Frank McCormick, because Ted Kaczewski played first, didn't need him. And he brought two or three outfielders to get the balls in, and we got out there and warmed up and took infield practice first. Hans Lobert was out there hitting the well, we had to have a catcher. We had Al Lakeman. He was second string catcher. Lobert hit ground balls to third base, shortstop, and second, just like taking infield, you know.
Yeah.
To see how Ted Kaczewski looked on ground balls, or if you throw one low or high, what he'd do. And after we had infield practice, Bucky Walters warmed up and pitched to him. And he hit some of the hardest balls I've ever seen hit since I've been playing ball. And hit them long distance and line drive. And he hit, I don't know how many hit over the fence, quite a few. But he could hit that line drive, man, against that fence out there like nobody's business. And we went on back, after it was over, we went on back up the steps. And, McKechnie was walking along there with us, and Hans Lobert, he was the coach. And I told McKechnie, I said, don't let that fella get away. I said, he's a real ball player. I said, he's a big man. He can hit the long ball. He didn't say nothing. And after I got up in the club, I asked him, check me. I said, where is he going now to try? He said, he's going to Yankee Stadium. And then he said, I think he's going to Detroit. He didn't say no more. And I told him again, I said, well, I'll tell you one thing. Don't let him get away.
Now, he must have just been a kid then, a teenage kid, or 1920, Kaczewski.
He finished college.
Oh, he had? Oh, I
University.
See.
University. Oh. University of Indiana.
Uh-huh.
He finished that year.
Okay.
Yeah. And I thought then, I said, oh, me, the Yankees will get him. But wound up Cincinnati getting the best offer.
Well, he played many years and did a great
12
job.
12 years, didn't he?
I don't know, probably at least that much.
Yeah, and then he was coach for a while.
Yeah, he coached for a long while.
Five.
But, Well, let me ask you. Was his arms as big then as they are now?
You know,
remember how they used to? Well, he cut his sleeves off. He never could wear the uniform down to the elbow like the regular uniform. He cut it off up at the shoulder.
I think he brought a uniform with him because we didn't have none up there big enough for him.
He'd wear a special sweatshirt underneath it because the regular uniform, his arms were just too big.
That's right.
They said if he lost the bat and just hit it with the arm, the ball would still go just as far as it did with the bat, I've heard people say.
You know the last place I saw where he was?
No.
He was coach with Pittsburgh.
Is that right?
That was a year or so ago. I guess he's done.
I don't remember. These fellows, as coaches, move around, and in Florida, I see them, and I can't remember from one year to the next what ball club they're with.
Yeah.
But he was with Cincinnati as a coach for a good many years.
Yeah, I remember, because I used to see him.
Yeah.
Well.
Well, I guess it's getting about dinner time, and I could sit here and talk all day.
I could, too.
Well, that's great. Maybe we'll continue it some other time, and we'll send this tape off to Bill Hugo in Cincinnati, and I think he publishes a newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say right on here that this is Woodrow Williams of Pamplin, Virginia. What's the zip code? So he'll send you a copy of it.
23958.
23958.
Yeah.
And Bill, I want a copy of that too. And you have my address in the directory and. Say hello to your wife. You know, we have these conventions, Sabre conventions, every year. This year we had it in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
And I can't get my wife to go, but Bill Hugo always takes his wife.
Yeah.
And I'm sure she has a great time, and there aren't too many who take their wives, and I'm always glad to see them because these pretty women kind of decorate up the hall when we have our meetings, and we have a lot of fun. We have some great fun. We had this year we have old timers, and some of them are not too well known, and those are the kind I like. But we did have a pretty well known pitcher that talked to us this year, Nelson Potter.
Nelson Potter.
You remember Nelson? He's from your era.
That's right.
Best known for pitching for the old St. Louis Browns.
St. Louis Browns, yeah.
Well, anyway, Bill, this is it, and. Good luck with Pete Rose and his club this year. Goodbye.
Hold it, Bill. Don't turn me off right now. I'm back in Florida. This is about a week after I made that tape with Woody. And I thought perhaps I could add a few things to it that we didn't talk about. We had a long talk before we started recording this tape, and then we talked for a long while afterwards. So let me relay some of those things to you. First of all, Woody was very quick to point out to me that the record book that I had with me and the old register from 1945 was wrong. Woodrow says that he was born in 1912 and not 1914 as the register states, and he's aware of that, and he said he told the people in Cincinnati when they got the information and when the book first came out that it was wrong, and they said, oh well, that's all right, and Woody laughed. He said they always wanted to try to make their ball players younger than they really were. So Woodrow played all his major league career 2 years younger than what he really was. He's 74 now, but he's right about at his playing weight. He doesn't have an ounce of fat on him, as you can see by the picture that I'm enclosing and sending along with you. Now, as far as his 10 consecutive hits is concerned in 1943, I have looked up and found the pitchers off whom he got those hits. And here they are. He got three off Max Lanier, and one off George Munger in the first game. The next game, he got three off Lon Warnke, and then Wise and Burrows, he got one each off. The third game, he got his last hit off a man, and I'll spell his name, H-E-N-Y-Z-E-W-S-K-I, for the Cubs. The Reds won all three games. Bucky Walters pitching the first one, Elmer Riddle the second one, and Johnny Vandermeer the third one. And that leads me to another point, a sore spot in my discussion with a lot of people is they'll always say wartime ball players. Well, this was during the wartime, and this is when these younger fans now talk about wartime baseball. But here were Lanier, Warnke, Wise, Vandermeer, Riddle, and Walters all pitching. Now let me name some of the other players who appeared in those games. I have them right here, just a moment. The 10 hits was over a three-game period, the first game being played against the Cardinals and the next two against the Cubs. Now here are some of the opposing players for St. Louis. There was Klein, Harry Walker, Stan Musial, Ken O'Day, Danny Littweiler, Deb Garms, Marty Marion, Whitey Kurowski, Johnny Hopp, and Walker Cooper. That doesn't sound like wartime ball players to me. Now in the Chicago two games, here are some of the players that appeared in their lineup. Stan Hack, Eddie Stanky, Phil Cavaretto, Bill Nicholson, Goodman, Lowry, that's Peanuts Lowry, Lou Novikoff, and Claude Passeau pitched in the game too. He didn't start the game, but he did relieve. Now, for Cincinnati, and I'm sure that you know who was playing then, but let me just, for the benefit of someone else who might listen to this tape, Dane Clay, G. Walker, Eric Tipton, Eddie Miller, Mueller was the catcher, and let's see, who were some of those? Crabtree, and Lonnie Fry played in one. He hadn't left the team yet. He and Williams were both in the lineup. Williams playing third base on the third game, the one in which he got his 10th hit. Now let's just say a few things about Woody since he retired from baseball. He came back to his little hometown of Pamplin. That's P-A-M-P-L-I-N, Virginia. And if you just write to Woody Williams, Pamplin, Virginia, that's all you need, and he'll get it, because there are only about 200 people in the town, and everybody knows everybody else, and most of them are related to each other. So that's the type of situation that exists there. He ran a little independent grocery store with his brother for many years, probably 30 years, up until the time that he retired. And he retired from the grocery store, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And since then, he just has a garden. He works a pretty good-sized garden every year. He does a little bit of hunting and just a little bit of golf. But generally, he takes it easy and walks around town and talks to some of the old-timers and about bygone days. And often he gets letters and cards asking for his autograph. And the Dodgers, surprisingly enough, communicate with him regularly. They send him all of their yearly books and anything that a former Dodger might be interested in. And he only played 20 games with the Dodgers. But his heart is with Cincinnati. He's able to get the Cincinnati games on radio. where he lives. So he listens to Joe Nuxall and Marty Bremerman on radio, and he gets a big kick out of that. He coached Little League for a good many years. I don't think he's done it in the last two or three years. And he appears at some old-timers games in and around Virginia. I've always been trying to get him to come down here to Florida in the spring and go to some spring training games, but he's pretty hard to pry loose. But I'm going to really extend a lot of effort come next summer and get him to go with me to the Sabre meeting at Washington. And that's not really very far. It's just a few hours' drive from where Woody lives. And I hope to be able to get him up there, and I'll take him up there as my guest. And when you contact him and send him a copy of your newsletter, if you would prod him on a little bit and tell him what he's missing and ask him to come along with that guy Ren Spear that sits under his tree and talks baseball with him so much. Now, as for this tape, I would like to have it back. Keep it just as long as you want to, Bill, and use it as much as you want to, and make a copy of it. But eventually, I would like to have it back, even if it's next year in Washington when you see me. I save these things, and every once in a while I like to get them out and play them.